Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around. Hey, hobby hackers, welcome back to part two of our conversation with Tim, the author of Framed, a Villain's Perspective on Social Media. In the last episode, we looked at how Tim helped clients grow by bending algorithmic rules. Today, we're going even deeper into the dark side. I got two lightsabers on either side of me. How social media systems manipulate behavior, and how creators can protect themselves while still growing. Tim, welcome back again to the podcast.
Hey, Junaid, thank you.
Now, Tim, you title your book Framed. That's a bold choice. What does it mean in the context of social media, and who's getting framed?
Framed is a complicated word. And partially, I was forced into using this word over other ones because so many other terms that have relevance on the internet have been taken by other authors. So we have ghosted, we have disrupted, we have zucked, we have all of these kind of participative verbs and in a kind of pitched to us in a way in that there's a salacious element, meaning like there's something negative, there's something below the surface here. And framed is really my perspective on that.
Yeah.
Why I think it's the right term, I've actually written like a 2,000 word blog post about. Nice. But for me, it's this idea that in the early days of Web 2.0, you had content in a feed, and typically there was quite a large frame around each piece of content. So not dissimilar to maybe what we would see on Zoom or other recording platforms. But today on modern social media, often we find that the content takes up the whole window. So there's no frame. It's frameless or borderless.
Yeah.
But in the early web, in early web 2.0, which my book covers in detail, it's actually not. It's actually, there was this concept of a frame. And the second aspect of it being framed, aside from framing being another word for one's perspective, is that I did do things that were true crime to an extent, or that were manipulative to an extent. So I thought to use something that suggests more of a salacious element or that bad things happened, I'll leave that for readers to uncover if they read the book.
I love that, Tim. Now, why do you think this villain's perspective is actually more honest than most marketing books out there?
This is a central part of my pitch. And I think even when I first spoke to you, I said, hey, we have so many experts, we have so many pundits, we have so many people proclaiming that they know this, that, and the other thing about marketing and about social media. My perspective is that I'm not the best marketer, but I am a software engineer who actually saw social media from two sides. And each of these sides is something that almost nobody has addressed before.
Yeah.
One, I broke the rules at a major scale. I generated millions of followers for my customers. In the other realm, I worked at a startup where I built persuasive technology systems, so recommendation systems, push notifications, and a newsfeed. So these are things that we just have so many people guessing on. And we have, even in AI, we have somebody actually does the research, then somebody else writes about it, somebody else rehashes that, somebody else puts that in AI, and then they generate it. I figured I needed to do something to stand out and something that was not iterative, but actually contained a ton of original research. That was my book. And I think what the reviews and really what the sales numbers are showing is that this was the right path to take.
Yeah, man, that's so powerful because social media doesn't just reflect culture. It's actually shaping it, right? We see that happening when short form video was introduced on TikTok immediately. Everybody else jumped on, right? We had Facebook, Instagram, now LinkedIn is pushing it even more.
Crazy,
right?
Crazy.
Pinterest also has these short form videos. YouTube took it, like every single platform, even platforms like CapCut And like these are editing platforms, but there's short form video embedded inside of it that you can use. Hey, use this template. And so it's really powerful to see that social media is not just reflecting what the culture is, it's actually shaping it. Now, Tim, what are some of the ways platform design influences not just what we post, but who we become as creators?
One thing that's troubling is that in your feed, whether that's on your phone or in your web browser on a desktop,
yeah,
there's only so much space there. Naturally, I would say most people probably want more exposure than they get. Mm. Some people are private and that's fine, but if you're running a business, you have something to promote, even if you post a picture that's really neat, most people would probably welcome a few dozen people they don't know being exposed to that picture, especially if those people give positive feedback or if those people might convert to customers.
Yeah.
What's happened is that everybody now is trying to compete for this limited space, which especially on Instagram and especially on Facebook, it's become much, much more precious as more content types and more ads have taken up some of the remaining space, right? It could be as high as 30% of content is advertisements now.
Yeah, yeah.
So the impact on creators and the impact on people like me and the impact on people who run businesses like you is that you're more or less forced to run ads. Mm. And if you're not forced into at least considering ads, it's creating this pressure to do things that are highly provocative, which we see in like emerging creative spaces, where we see new influencers, new musical artists, and other types of like internet celebrities doing things that are highly either dangerous or highly controversial, highly sexualized, just things that wouldn't have been cool to do 15 years ago. We're finding that new brands of creators are being forced into these much more extreme fringes because that actually gets better rank and that actually can get you some organic virility, if you will.
Dang, that's scary. And that's definitely scary for sure. I do see that happening. Anytime you go on the search page for Instagram, the stuff on there, wait, do I really want to see this? Is this something that the platform should be promoting? Now, talk to me about how can creators stay intentional and not become a product of the platform? I know we spend a ton of time creating content to bring value to the people. What are some of the things that creators can do?
The main thing has to be spending less time on the platform. Fundamentally, content creation does not require being on the platform. Now, to conform to a trend, it does, because you have to know what other people are talking about.
Yeah.
And even in the early days of YouTube, which nobody remembers, a way that some of these channels first attracted followers or viewers was the video response feature, which is that you would get on your webcam.
Yeah.
And nobody's ever talked about that. You would have this thing, it would be like response. You would get on your webcam and you'd say, hey, here's what I thought about your video. So things like that, that are content aware, of course you have to spend time on social media understanding it. But for a lot of other content creation, I've found that a lot of my clients back in the day were just spending more time than they needed to on social media under the guise of it building their expertise, when actually it was just unproductive time and they were psychologically dependent on scrolling. Yeah. So a lot of it is just understanding to spend less time there and understanding that like there's no way to really win the game.
You're absolutely right. Tim, you've been on both sides, building the engine and gaming it. What's your advice to creators who want to grow without selling out?
Selling out is a funny concept now.
Right.
I remember myself, you could think about the early internet, and there's a lot in my book about the first sellout. So I did original research where I found what I believe was the first occurrence of influencer marketing on YouTube. And why this is significant is that back then, the creators did not have to reveal that it was a sponsored video.
Yeah,
we didn't have these FTC regulations, but people in the marketing space were fascinated at the time. So I actually spoke with the original journalist from, I think, like Adweek, and he said, yeah, wow, this might have been the very first thing, but we just thought it was for the Sanyo Zakti camera. And then the next campaign was for Carl's Jr.'s, I believe.
Okay. Okay.
But the point is that creators today have to wrestle with authenticity versus what it might mean to be a sellout. And I would say that it really comes down to your own value system and projecting that against what the audience wants. So the main example here is that we see a lot of high quality creators simply bringing in things from the highest bidder and then showing that to their audience.
Yeah.
The example I would give is related to gambling. So if a creator is running any type of sports gambling ad, for me, that violates my value system. They are a sellout, but they're probably doing this because they're the highest bidder. Mm. And that's one of those things where I think it really comes down more to values. In my shoes, who am I to judge?
You're absolutely correct. And who are we to judge what they're doing? And if that makes sense, you probably mentioning the same, right? Was that, is it Jamie Foxx who's showing up everywhere? Talk about this gambling platform, right? But outside of that, I also know that the sponsors that are providing camera gear. So for example, just 2 weeks ago, every single creator that I follow was talking about the new Insta360 X5 or the new Sony R50V camera. Like they're all talking about this new gear because it just dropped and there's this sponsorship track now, which is really totally fine. You're not really selling out because if you think about it, the term comes from film industry. When you have a Pepsi product placed, so they call it product placement, right? So now it's not even product placement anymore. It's more going in a, hey, we're going to support you. And if you've seen the show Only Murders in the Building, the TV show about podcasting, about crime, he goes and he talks to one of the other neighbor and he basically runs his chicken shop. So they were the sponsor for the podcast. So they had to rename the podcast name and put the company name in the beginning of it, which is pretty interesting. Now, Tim, is there such a thing as ethical growth at scale anymore?
I would think there has to be, because there are new people signing up for internet services every day.
Amen.
So to think about ways to get exposure and to attract an audience, whether that's new people or just new people just hearing about what you have to offer for the first time, there's always the opportunity for growth. We'd have to think that there might not be a single creator out there who has fully tapped their niche or their market. And that's, I think, what drives us to log in every day is knowing that even as painful as it can be, there's always one more sale to be made. There's always at least one more viewer or one more follower. So I think it's definitely possible, but past a certain threshold of audience, it becomes very hard because then you also have to think about the image and the messaging and like keeping people happy where you have more or less like PR style management and imaging to pander to that audience. So that becomes, it's like you could become a victim of your own success as well, but it's still possible to grow past that point.
Tim, thank you so much. Now, last one before we close. First of all, it's been an honor getting to talk with you, learn about what you've done. And if Framed were adapted into a limited series, what platform would you want it to air on and who plays your character?
This is very funny because the CEO or the guy who really founded Shark Social, we went on for dinner pretty recently and we had a pretty serious discussion of the more narrative driven aspects of this story. What if we did pitch it to a studio and what if we did try to option off the rights to it? So for me, I think that it's more of an essay collection than a narrative at the end of the day, but I'm fine with having it at Netflix. As a technologist, I have the most respect for the technology system at
Oh my
Netflix.
God.
And I think what they have accomplished is something that like will go down in human history. As far as the engineering culture, I've read that book, but then also as far as just the scale they've reached. So that would be great. And as far as somebody playing me, it's just like, it's just way too hard. It just would say way too much maybe about how I view it, because I think ultimately if the rights did get optioned, which I don't think is very likely at all, it's going to be as controversial as possible. Like it's going to be like terrible. And like I probably won't ever want to watch it.
Tim, thank you so much. We'll be sure to include the links in the show notes, but where can people pick up your book, follow your writing, and connect for a growth strategy with you?
So Framed, A Villain's Perspective on Social Media is now available for wide distribution, primarily on Amazon, where I'm still selling it effectively at cost. So that's the ebook at $199 and the paperback, which is over 400 pages, at $15. I'm also currently working on the audiobook. So that's another way that people can interface with it for those who don't have as much time. Those interested in reading more about me and my background, I'm on LinkedIn. That's one social media platform I do use. I do long form posts on my Beehive, so timohern.beehive.com, and also have much more of a back catalog and archive at tjohern.com.
Tim, you didn't mention that you are a beekeeper. Are you a beekeeper?
I am not a beekeeper.
Okay. Because this podcast started as a documenting my journey as a beekeeper. So I've been a beekeeper for a few years. And it's fun to hear somebody else using Beehive as a... Oh, sorry. Yes, Beehive is the newsletter platform. I totally forgot.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, thank you so much. Appreciate you. And that was a little snafu on my end. But I love hearing the words Beehive because we need the bees. Without the bees, we don't have our food system and whatnot. But thanks again. We'll be sure to include all the links that you've shared in the show notes so folks can get to you, get your book. I can't wait to read the book myself because I think it's going to open my mind even more as much as this episode has. So thank you so much again, Tim, and we'll check you out in the next episode.
Thank you.
All right, hobby hackers, you're not just feeding the algorithm, you're feeding a system that's feeding you. It's really funny the way that comes together. Stay conscious, stay curious, and keep hacking your way to meaningful growth. We'll see you in the next episode. Thank you for listening to this Hacks and Hobbies episode. Junaid would love to hear from you, so please leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. Visit hacksandhobbies.com to find additional information on the guest today, as well as the show notes.